I used to have this joke with my wife where I set up a series recording on our cable to only record Keanu Reeves movies. And whenever the thing's recording, there's a little red light. And the joke was like, if I was having a bad dream and I woke up and the red light was on the cable box, I knew that Keanu Reeves was with me.
Hey, everybody. This is coming out on Election Day. I hope you're listening to it while you're waiting in line at the polls. Actually, no, I don't. Listen to something informative while you're waiting in line at the polls. Hope you listen to this after, when you're biting your nails waiting what the results will be. I was going to try to do something smart in this little intro, but honestly, the world's really mixed up right now, and what better for a mixed up world than enjoying a film by one of your favorite actors? So I'm going to send you guys to the interview right now, and I'm going to sit back and watch Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Enjoy. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to At Least There's This, a podcast about some of the small good things in our world of, we all knew this was fucking happening. We all knew this was coming, didn't we? That's the world we're in right now, where it's like, yeah, no, a shooting spree at a synagogue in a black church and pipe bombings in the same day? No one saw that coming. We all saw it coming. Unless we didn't. Unless you're listening to this and you're that detective who it's just dawning on you right now. And if that's the case, you're like, maybe you're 6 months too late. Or maybe you're just on time. And you finally got that clue that you need to solve it all. You got that clue that's going to help you open up your mind and get enlightened. Because in a world where there's all this really genuinely horrible bullshit, at least there's...
Keanu Reeves.
So fucking excited to talk about the savior we all need and deserve. Guys, I am thrilled. I'm sitting across from Andy Kreiza, an amazing journalist. But Andy, why don't you let my guests know a little bit more about you, the work you do?
Sure, yeah. So as Alex said, my name's Andy Kreiza. I'm the senior food and drink editor at Thrillist, which is a food and travel and entertainment website that kind of does similar stuff to what you're doing. We're trying to find really good, highly specific spots of light in, you know, an increasingly frustrating world. And so my day-to-day is telling you where you should eat. I don't tell you where you shouldn't eat, because if I'm not telling you about it, the idea is that we're not recommending it.
I actually really respect that.
There are enough food critics out there. I think that my job is more to be like a guy that you ran into a bar at a hotel lobby and is just like, here's where you should go. So that's what I get to do on my day-to-day. I spent 15 years as a film critic as well in Portland, Oregon. I'm brand new to Los Angeles. I have no fucking clue what I'm doing at any given point. It's fantastic.
So at the end, we'll get your Twitter and where people can find you. Guys, lie to Andy about Los Angeles. Find him on Twitter and just lie to him. Tell him things that aren't true, and we'll see if we can sucker him.
I'll go basically anywhere the internet tells me to go. So that's kind of a problem in my life.
We got a real rube here, guys, and we really need to lighten the mood. So, Andy, are you in your outlook on life an optimist, pessimist, neither, both, whatever?
I think that I'm an optimist to a fault.
To a fault.
To a fault. Yeah. I've always been kind of the type of person that will listen to a pessimist's point of view and then try and change their mind. I think that, you know, with all the stuff that's going on in this world, and that's always been going on in this world, really, it's important to take stock of what is good around you and what you can explore and try and find that light. You know, it sounds really corny to say. I'm a dad of a 3-year-old. Everything is new and exciting to me, and like I want to give that worldview to her, which I had growing up as well.
Uh-huh. Do you mind if I ask why? Why is that important?
Because otherwise you just get broken down. You know, if everything's negative and everything's horrifying, that's all you're going to see. You know, I grew up in and around Flint, Michigan, which is a place that's been pummeled consistently with bad news after bad news after being kind of this like Midwestern paragon of the American dream. That's where Flint came from in the first place. It was a place where anybody with any education or any language skills could come and get a well-paying job. And it's the birth of tract housing is Detroit and Flint, you know? So it was always this place where everybody is stubbornly prideful and looking forward to showing people that they're wrong about these negative perceptions, even as it gets just like consistently slapped down. And so growing up around that with really positive, optimistic parents, I think that that's just kind of what's been bred into me. And I see it as a challenge to show people that, you know, not everything's terrible.
Do you know where that optimism came from pre your parents? Do you think it's just the sort of American spirit of the age?
I think it's probably a combination of that and, you know, the immigrant, you know, we're coming to America experience of, you know, trying to escape something to find a better life.
Were your parents immigrants?
My dad technically is, but he's kind of a fake immigrant. Okay. He came over when he was like three. Mm. But his dad was a bipolar car dealership owner, and his mom was a former World War II nurse slash Scottish woman. So there were a lot of really interesting cultural ideals bouncing back and forth. And at the end of the day, it was like, okay, well, we left a war-torn country to come here and make a better life. And if that life is going to give us challenges, we're going to fight back and we're going to do it with a smile on our face and we're going to try and make other people's days better.
So what does that look like then in your day-to-day?
Well, my day-to-day consists a lot of me sitting in a quiet office at my home. So it's pretty easy to be optimistic when you can just like shrug it off and, you know, go get a bag of Cheetos or something. Basically, if things start frustrating me in my day-to-day, I don't have to go walk through an office to go blow off steam. I can go in my backyard or I can go, you know, play with my remote control dinosaur because I'm a 37-year-old man who does that. But I don't know. I feel like no matter where you go, you could go to the most utopian society and find something that's going to be shitty to you. I had extremely horrifying experiences in Portland to the point where, like, I thought I was going to die a couple of times. But every single time I was like, we can do better than this. Like, don't dwell on this bad stuff. And it's really difficult because there's this latent pessimist hiding behind it. And it's almost like wearing an optimistic costume sometimes, but to me, like, putting that best foot forward and trying to find the best in any given situation is important. And it's a value I want my kid to have too.
And do you think that's helped you change situations?
Probably not.
Okay.
Well, it's the change you affect, right? Like, you can try and rub off positively on other people, or you can contribute to the misery. And you know, if the day ends and somebody's slightly more chipper because I cracked a stupid joke at them or, you know, made their life a little bit easier, I'm going to do that.
So it kind of sounds like you don't think you can necessarily change the roller coaster, but you can make the person's time on that roller coaster maybe a little bit nicer.
Yeah, when you take that picture coming down Splash Mountain, like like you can make that at least a happy memory, even if, like, you know, you got norovirus from the water.
Yeah, it's still gonna be horrifying and you'll get sepsis, but it'll be fun on the way down.
That's very real, by the way.
The norovirus in the water? Really?
Well, I drank the water at Chuck E. Cheese one time.
Why?
Because I'm an idiot. Okay. Like, I thought it would be funny. I was doing a story about, like, going as a 30-year-old man to see if Chuck E. Cheese is still magical.
Oh,
and
God,
like,
you are a real journalist.
I posed, this is the kind of hard-hitting stuff that a guy from Flint does. I posed for a picture with a clown squirt gun thing aiming at my mouth, and
oh,
I went home and
no.
just basically died for 3 days.
No.
But you know what? That was, and this is what I'm talking about, that was a horrifying experience, but how fucking funny is that? You know, like,
you are
a year later, it's really, really funny
that
you know, got dehydrated from blowing out of all of my orifices because I just took a small sip of that water.
You are the second journalist I've had on this podcast who's almost died in the course of their journalistic pursuit. To be fair, the first journalist was in Iraq.
Yeah,
He was a war correspondent, but still.
A really shady Chuck E. Cheese is basically the Iraq of children's entertainment. So
yeah. Truer words never been spoken on this podcast. Speaking of true words, let's segue into someone who we actually both coincidentally really love and respect. We're here to talk about Keanu Reeves.
The Keanu Reeves.
The Keanu Reeves.
He's not like Gallagher, where there's a second one that's like racist.
No, there can never be a second Keanu Reeves because he's the one.
He is the one, and he's ageless and just consistently brings that Keanu thunder to everything he does, and it's like the best thing in the world.
So I could talk about how much I love Keanu for a long time, and I have, but we're not here for me, we're here for you. So why did you want to come on a podcast about the small good things in our Nazi-filled murder world and talk about talk about an actor who a lot of people think is just kind of like silly?
Because I think that first and foremost, Keanu Reeves is so present in our day-to-day culture in a way that we don't really think about it, especially if you're a rabid consumer of pop culture as I am. Like, we've gotten to the point where Keanu Reeves has been making movies for almost 40 years, which is insane to think about. Yeah. I mean, I think he's like 55 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you still see photos of him, you know, dual wielding guns in Brooklyn on a horse. But he's at this point, you know, he's become the TBS standard. He's become the, you know, any cable channel at any given point is showing a Keanu Reeves movie. I used to have this joke with my wife where I set up a series recording on our cable to only record Keanu Reeves movies. And whenever the thing's recording, there's a little red light. And the joke was like, if I was having a bad dream and I woke up and the red light was on the cable box, I knew that Keanu Reeves was with me.
That's funny, but it's kind of really beautiful.
Yeah, and ever since I was a kid, you know, he's been a part of some of my favorite films. And I say this as a person with a background in film history and, you know, a very... unironic appreciation of these movies. And I think that especially with movies like Point Break, they've kind of had this second life as almost an ironic hipster-fied, you know, thing that people claim to love. And I just genuinely love them.
Yeah. Talk more about that irony versus lack of irony, because something as a fan of his work that I see is that a lot of people will laugh when you say, like, no, my favorite actor is Keanu Reeves, because they think he's like, you mean the guy who goes, whoa?
Yeah, but
right?
He's saying whoa because no other actor in his generation, and this is a multi-generational movie star, and in an era where the concept of a movie star is kind of going away, at least, you know, from, like, I'm going to go see this movie because whatever Chris is in it,
right?
Like, it's starting to wane a little bit.
Most of the movie stars who we care about are in their 50s and 60s.
Yeah, and most of the ones that are coming up because they're part of these larger franchises. Yeah. Keanu is only done twice. Well, three times if you count Bill and Ted. And you should. Bill and Ted's actually one of the most joyful pairs of movies that you can honestly see, especially in a multi-generational setting. But I think that the whoa, like the whoa Keanu Reeves, like that whoa, is because he's the perfect audience surrogate. Like, Keanu Reeves can show up into a situation in a movie and be you. Neo is not reacting in The Matrix because he's just an idiot. Like, he's a guy that's been sucked out of this, like, weird office drone reality where also everyone, like, wears leather and goes to Rob Zombie shows at night. But he gets sucked out of that. He's this office drone milquetoast dweeb that's basically a blank slate. And he gets dropped into that. And of course he's like, what would you say if you saw Lawrence Fishburne jump from building to building? You wouldn't like have some weird,
quippy, cool thing. Yeah,
you'd just be like, whoa. And that's incredible. There's this shot this scene in Point Break where Anthony Kiedis confronts Keanu Reeves while he's taking a shower after surfing. And they explain to him why they're going to just fuck his shit up. And he looks at him and he just goes, oh. And then he starts fighting. Like, he doesn't like say anything funny. He just like... he thinks about what he's going to do, and he goes, oh, and then whacks the guy with a surfboard. It's awesome, and that's what I would probably do.
So they're – I'm pretty sure they were considering casting Will Smith as Neo instead of Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And if you replace the two actors in every movie, it doesn't give any Keanu movie the joy it has. I love Will Smith, especially like Men in Black Will Smith, so fucking charismatic, so charming, but a completely different – audience surrogate. Hitch has a ton of problems, but there's a reason he's Hitch. Like, that guy's so cool. I want to be like him. He wouldn't be the right guy to be like, what the fuck is this weird world that I'm in? Like, what is this dreamscape that I'm in? Which Keanu can nail every time.
It's an interesting parallel between the two of them, too, because, you know, they both kind of started becoming these blockbuster marquee stars around the same time, and they were both specializing. they both came up in like buddy cop type bombastic, you know, Point Break constantly is considered a romance between Johnny Utah and Bodhi. But it's also at its core a buddy cop movie between Angelo Pappas, the Gary Busey character, and Johnny Utah, the Keanu character. And so as he's doing stuff like that, Will Smith is preparing to come out of being fresh and become, you know, Mike Lowry in the Bad Boys movies. But then they both kind of springboarded into these weird, high concept, like sci-fi tinged B movies that with like crazy, crazy things going on in them. And Will Smith would go on to do like Men in Black and, you know, all these characters where they both have swagger, right?
Yeah.
They both have a lot of swagger, but Keanu's more in discovery mode for most of them, like your Johnny Mnemonics or your Chain Reaction, which is a terrible movie, but he's way more believable because he's not Keanu. Will Smith is always Will Smith in those movies, or a Will Smith surrogate. Keanu Reeves in those movies, he's figuring this shit out at the same time as you and I are,
right?
And that's why the Matrix sequels kind of suffer in a lot of ways, because like the first one's so good because he's figuring it out with you. Once he has it figured out, the movies don't have that like air of discovery, that wonderment.
Yeah,
like he's this Jesus figure all of a sudden, and it's kind of boring. Like it was fun to watch him like all of a sudden realize that he could execute these high flying, you know, wuxia style kung fu moves.
Yeah. God, there's so much I want to get into about Keanu, and I could talk about it forever, but I realize we might be alienating our audience to an extent. Most of my audience is American, but there are some people who aren't, even though Keanu is a huge star. So I think people probably know him and The Matrix a little bit. But for those of my audience who maybe don't think about Keanu Reeves like we do, and you guys are wrong, you should be.
Absolutely.
He's amazing. Can you talk a bit about his background, a bit about where he came from, and kind of what he's known for before we dive back into what he does?
I can't really do that from a personal standpoint,
okay,
because to me, I'm more interested in the mystique of the actor and the public persona.
Okay.
Although, you know, you hear a lot about his past, and he seems like a very, very nice man, which also blows your mind because he's made a career out of just executing people constantly on screen. His filmic presence and his public rise to this like stratosphere of movie stardom started out in these really oddball movies in the 80s. You know, he starred in Youngblood, which was a hockey drama with Patrick Swayze, who he'd reunite with later in Point Break. He was in River's Edge with Crispin Glover, which is kind of like a high school redneck punk rock noir type film. Very, very underseen also, especially, you know, given that it's 35 years later. But and then he was in like Babes in Toyland and all these movies where they're trying to figure out what to do with this kind of like puppy dog of a man. And then he exploded onto the scene with Bill and Ted, which is a movie just so full of joy and lacking in malice. One of the best stoner movies that doesn't actually explicitly show or talk about marijuana at all. There are some things that have aged in it, but it's largely a movie that just does not have a bit of malice in it at all.
The lack of irony, and we keep coming back to lack of irony, is the reason why I love Keanu Reeves and why his movies work. And it's why the Key and Peele movie Keanu didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Because it was very ironic. And Keanu Reeves works because he and what he does has no irony.
Yeah, yeah.
It is what it is.
Right. But when you really peel back the layers of his career, and I mean, you can – he went bopping between blockbusters and made some, you know, cheesy romantic comedies, as anyone want to do as soon as they get their name on a marquee. But there were four movies in particular that were kind of paradigm shifts for American filmmaking in general, and – Keanu Reeves is at the front and center of these movies. It's Point Break, which was kind of where the 80s big muscular action star crested like a wave, to use a really cheesy simile for a movie about surfing, and took all these old school tropes of action filmmaking, directed by a feminist filmmaker, mind you, and kind of turned them on their heads. Then he went on to do Speed after that, which was one of the most commercially successful action films of the 90s, and began like kicking off this whole Die Hard Anna trend of filmmaking. after that, like, he went and started doing all these B movies, your Chain Reactions and Devil's Advocate, which isn't really a B movie. That's its own monkey. Yeah. But then he went and made The Matrix, which absolutely changed everything about action filmmaking.
And it changed culture. Like, absolutely. Our culture, for better and in some ways for worse, is still reeling from The Matrix.
Yeah, yeah. And for better or for worse is actually pretty on point there. I mean, that was the action movie equivalent to Pulp Fiction, where everyone started riffing on it afterwards. Right. And so all of a sudden, everyone's wearing black leather trench coats and everyone's doing triple back, you know, Marky Mark's running through an alley and doing a triple back flip for no reason. And then John Wick comes out, and John Wick completely changed the way that we're looking at action movies for the better, where it's focused on the stunts and allowing stuntmen to be directors and show you this athleticism. So with all this goofy Keanu Reeves, like, everyone thinks of him as being this kind of dopey surfer dude, and that goes way back to Bill and Ted and Point Break, for that matter, which is a way more layered performance that we can maybe get into in a moment. But this persona of a blank slate for Keanu Reeves works really, really, really well for him. And in his movies where he's trying to figure out that mystery or he's confused about what's going on, he's perfect.
One of my favorite Keanu Reeves movies, because of the blank slate trying to figure shit out, is Constantine.
Yeah, Constantine's great.
It's good and totally underrated, and it's also got Tilda in it, and Tilda Swinton is another one of the greatest actors of now or any generation. But I want to ask, because I know that you and I can talk about Keanu Reeves and what he does and why it's great forever, but I want to talk more about you.
Okay.
Because that's why we're here, right? Although we could wax poetical about our Lord and Savior forever, but why do you care so much? Why does he make you feel safe when that red light is on?
I distinctly remember as a kid in Michigan watching Bill and Ted over and over on VHS and just really embracing that that warmth that he exuded, you know? Ted Theodore Logan is an eternal optimist. Every single thing that comes out of his mouth is positive, or trying to bring his buddy up, or trying to understand history, or quoting heavy metal album lyrics as philosophy. Like, everything that he does is trying to please somebody. And I always thought that was really cool. And then, you know, Bogus Journey comes out, which has this great line where they see Satan and they're like, whoa! Like, hey, how's it going, Beelzebub? And it's like the nicest thing that you could say to the eternal lord of darkness. And it's like, holy cow. And that's the same year that Point Break came out. So
wait, really?
Yeah, Bogus Journey and Point Break came out in the same year. And
I
so,
had thought he would have, like, left that shit behind. I had no idea.
He still isn't leaving. They're still trying to make another Bill and Ted.
I cannot fucking wait. I hope so much.
I would love to see that. Yeah. But so like, he made this pivot, right, where you couldn't really... Point Break is also the first R-rated movie I saw. It was a great, great, great run of hiding movies from my parents. Like, I saw Die Hard and Point Break and T2 in the same week.
Wow.
Like, holy cow, right? It was like, wow, violence is great. At least there's this. But, like, the juxtaposition between these two characters, right? Like, so you've got this really gentle, kind-hearted stoner dude, and then you've got... this kind of dickhead, Johnny Utah in Point Break for the cheap seats, is a former Ohio State Buckeyes quarterback who reinvents himself as a fresh out of Quantico FBI agent trying to track down bank robbers in L.A. So he's a fish out of water, too, trying to, you know, make his way. And I think that a lot of the reason that people had a hard time divorcing themselves from Ted Theodore Logan into serious Keanu is the Johnny Utah character in Point Break is somebody that's trying to pretend he's something that he's not. So, like, his delivery seems stilted and weird, but it's like this yuppie Midwestern jock trying to fit in with the surfers while also trying to fit in with these FBI people and lie to Lori Petty. Like, the work that he puts into seeming confused, it comes off naturalistic in a lot of ways, and it followed him, but... to get back a little bit more to the point, like, this friendly puppy dog personality that he put out in Bill and Ted, it does follow him for good reasons, too. And it makes even his most harsh characters approachable. And the movies that he makes are, by and large, fantastic.
And so why did you take to that so much as a younger man? Did you need that in your life?
You know, I don't know that I needed it in my life, but, you know, I was one of those kids that was always at the video store, and you look for a familiar face just like you would at a party or something like that, you know, and you see Keanu Reeves glowering out from a VHS box or smiling from a VHS box, and you're like, okay, there's something I can at least get behind there.
So were you ever disappointed with that?
Oh, I'm consistently disappointed with it. I mean, I sat down and watched, strictly by virtue of Keanu Reeves being in it, this, like, Nancy Meyers movie called Something's Gotta Give, where Keanu Reeves plays a good-hearted doctor. And, like, it starts out with Crazy Town's Butterfly Song and Jack Nicholson's, like, banging models and shit. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch this entire movie because I know that Keanu Reeves is going to show up at some point and, like, okay, make me feel better about this.
So then why now do you still need that?
I don't know, honestly. It's like comfort food for me.
Okay.
You know, like, knowing that at any given point there's going to be an at least marginally entertaining Keanu Reeves movie ready for me to watch. It's like, you know, you eat chicken noodle soup when you're sick, or I watch a Keanu Reeves movie. It makes me feel better.
And what is it that makes you feel better about it?
I don't know, because I'm not a big hardcore fanboy of anything. And I wouldn't consider myself to be a hardcore fanboy of Keanu Reeves by any means. I just enjoy an awful lot of the films that he makes. Like, I don't, like, dork out on it. I wouldn't get upset with anybody who had a different opinion than me. But knowing that there's a decent Keanu Reeves movie to watch to cheer me up at almost any given time, it gives me a little bit of comfort and solace.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious about unpacking this, because this, you literally are hitting on the premise of my show, right? And it doesn't mean you have to know the Roland Barthes unpacked mythological version of why you like what you like, but it's that when you are upset, maybe frightened, maybe lost, at least there is a Keanu Reeves movie, right? It is literally, at least there's this. And that's why I'm so curious, because something about it, and it's not at least there's an 80s action comedy, right, at least there's a lighthearted stoner comedy, because there are other lighthearted stoner comedies. There are other fantastic 80s action comedies, or like 90s action movies. There's, you know, Rush Hour, there's Men in Black, there's all this other great shit, but you're not talking about that. You're talking about movies with specifically this actor in it. And there's something about his body of work and what he does that, like, makes you feel better.
I think it probably, if I had to try and put a point on it, it's that idea that it's easy to project yourself onto that. Like, we watch these high fantasy or sci-fi or cheesy bombastic action movies and kind of want to see a little bit of ourselves in it.
Mm.
And I don't see myself in Keanu Reeves by any means. Like, I am not nearly as handsome, I'm not nearly as charismatic, but the way that he plays those characters does allow this, like, audience surrogacy that kind of exists in video games as well. I'm not much of a gamer, but the idea of, like, watching The Matrix, right? And he's this dweeby guy who happens to be a hacker or whatever, and he's this blank slate that I can watch that and be like, whoa, what if that was me? Like, all of a sudden I'm uploaded with the ability to do martial arts, or, you know, a Point Break, where it's like, okay, I'm being tasked with pretending to be somebody else. So you're not just getting this kind of very broad character in his the initial part of his performance. You're getting somebody trying to pretend and fit in with something that they don't understand.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where he excels the most, and where his movies excel the most, is that it allows you to kind of, you can take his face off almost in a way. And God, if he was in Face Off, holy God.
What a good movie. Yeah. I mean, Face Off is
fine on its own.
It's fine on its own, but Face Off with Keanu Reeves and Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
The surgery would make a lot more sense.
Yeah, they do look kind of alike. I just saw Mandy, by the way. Have you seen Mandy?
I haven't seen Mandy yet.
Mandy is Nick Cage's Matrix.
Yeah.
It is a movie that is made for him and is perfect for him. I'm not a big Nick Cage fan, but that movie, everything that's in his wheelhouse, he does perfectly in that movie.
Well, and I think that that's part of Keanu's charm as well, to put a little bit more emphasis on. We were talking about this a little bit more before the show, but he is a character that, or an actor that knows his limitations, and he knows what his character is and what his persona is.
Yeah.
And he chooses him very, very well. You're not going to get, early on you would get Keanu Reeves in Much Ado About Nothing or
right.
Bram Stoker's Dracula, where it's just like, dude,
it's not right.
What are
yeah.
Or even like, there's this movie called Little Buddha where he's...
You know, I will disagree with you about Little Buddha, because to me, what makes Keanu great is that he is a little disassociated and he saves the world.
Yeah.
And that's why it works in Bill and Ted, works in Little Buddha, works in Constantine, Day the Earth Stood Still, Matrix, obviously. And that's why I like John Wick doesn't work for me.
See, that's exactly why John Wick works for me.
Why?
Because John Wick is like, okay, so if we're talking about the paradigm shifting Keanu Reeves movies,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
You've got your point, again, for the cheap seats. Hi, Mom. You've got Point Break and you've got Speed and The Matrix, where he's trying to figure out the mystery. But John Wick works well because he's the embodiment of a mystery.
Oh.
He's a character who's not – he knows everything that's going on. People are trying to figure his shit out. But we know Keanu Reeves so well at that point that watching him – he barely talks in that movie. He is nothing but pure id in that movie, and it is fantastic.
You know what? I love that. And that reminds me, we were talking about a Keanu Reeves movie that we both love and not a lot of people have seen, Man of Tai Chi, where it's his directorial debut, mm-hmm. where he is the mystery in that. And that worked for me, though, because the world feels tonally similar to The Matrix, and he feels very tonally similar to Neo in it, just if Neo were a villain in a more realistic world. But he's the mystery in that as well.
Yeah, and it works for him because it defies the expectation that you've put on him for, especially if you've watched a lot of his films, it defies everything that you think that you're going to see. Like that puppy dog shit goes right out the window in that movie. And Man of Tai Chi is Keanu Reeves directing the guy who taught him Kung Fu for The Matrix. So Tiger Chen, that's his name, right?
Tiger Chen, yeah.
Tiger Chen is the star of that movie. And he basically made it to say thank you for making him a bombastic force of nature.
And he makes Tiger Chen fucking rule
in that film.
So they basically pioneered this technology. I know people use all the time to do the same shit they did in the late 90s with like 1,000 cameras with one single camera so that they were able to do these incredible fight scenes with Tiger Chen, with dudes like Iko Uwais, who's like the amazing Indonesian martial artist who's in all the movies now, where the camera's constantly just swinging around them, and it looks so great. But then, again, that's another thing that Keanu does that's so good in terms of being an audience surrogate. If I watch Jackie Chan, and I grew up on Jackie Chan, he was my idol as a kid, I, like, practiced Kung Fu my whole life, and I still couldn't really put myself in Jackie Chan's place.
Right.
Right? I couldn't make myself be like Jackie Chan. Same with Tiger Chen, same with Iko Uwais, same with Tony Jaa, right? Like, even if you're an amazing martial artist, I can't be Tony Jaa unless I'm Tony Jaa, and then I'm already in the movies. But with Keanu, even though dude is good, he practiced really hard and he's got his moves down, the way he moves and what's going on with his face, I feel like I can transpose myself on mm-hmm. him.
Yeah, he's not mugging, he's not quipping, he's just, he's glowering and he's a presence. And,
right.
And that's great. And, you know, that does get in a little bit to the idea of almost like a cultural appropriation for martial arts type movies. But one of the things that's really rad about Keanu Reeves also is that he did direct that movie as a vehicle for the guy who trained him to do it. He was able to absorb his teachings, and then he was like, dude, I'm going to make this movie and I want you to be the headline star of it. That's what John Wick is too. John Wick was directed by the stuntmen or his stunt doubles from The Matrix. That's why those action scenes, which we see all the time now, where it's like, instead of 900 jump cuts of people getting punched in the face from 16 angles, that thing just chills back and lets you watch. I mean, the new Mission Impossible has that crazy bathroom fight scene. There's hardly any cuts in that. And it's because people like Keanu Reeves realize that the true craftsmen that are making these films with him are the people that should be behind the camera, too. And
yeah.
That's pretty fucking cool.
That is really cool. That's cool. So we live in this cultural landscape that loves violence. And it's nice that at least people are bringing out the actual artistry in it so that you have to see what it takes to be good at it. Like you see Keanu on a gun range actually practicing. Yeah, he's not just doing shit to make him look good. That actually made me want to ask you about something, because you talked about how Keanu kind of has a peaceful presence, even though he murks people in a lot of his films.
Constantly.
But at least until John Wick, he rarely ever is murdering people in such a mechanical way.
Yeah. And I have a lot of conflict about that as well. I will say, you know, as a lifelong pacifist who really enjoys bombastic action.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's something to the craft of it. I mean, I think that a film like John Wick is the cinematic action equivalent of watching a ballet. And you're watching these people that are highly trained. You know, most practicing martial artists aren't practicing so that they can go walk into a dojo and just destroy everybody, right? They're practicing so that if something ever happened, they would be able to do that. But this allows a showcase for what they would do.
Right. This is the fantasy.
If that were the case, yeah. And I mean, there's reams and reams and reams of paper and miles of film of people discussing whether it's okay to watch violent action movies as somebody that's a pacifist. And I'm not smart enough or educated. Well, I guess to get smart, sometimes you get educated. But I don't have the perspective to lend a lot to that conversation. But I will say that as pieces of craftsmanship and showcases of athleticism, especially with something like John Wick, where they're not relying on stunt doubles an awful lot. The stunt doubles are the stars of that movie. And
right.
Keanu was doing all of his own stuff in it, which is funny because in Point Break, he didn't. Point Break had Patrick Swayze jump out of a plane about 200 times and shot all of his skydiving scenes live, and Keanu's on top of a fan for most of it. So I wonder if he learned something about putting himself out there. He did most of them for Speed, too, though.
Really?
Yeah, he jumped between the bus and the car in Speed.
I guess he had to learn it. But so
anyway,
I want to go back to the pacifism in action, because some of my favorite, and I think your favorite of his movies, are ones wherein the violence isn't naturalistic. The violence in The Matrix isn't a man in our reality using amazing kung fu punches to break fathers and mothers and sons and husbands. It is a man trying to free the world from computer programs using martial arts to do it. And that's the same with, like, Constantine. He's not fighting somebody's gym teacher or a cop who's just trying to, like, pay for someone's medical bills. He's fighting Satan.
Right.
And the action is all geared around something sort of distanced from the actual human element of violence, which you could say, like, well, that distances us from violence and that's bad. Or you could say, if you're going to have a violent fantasy, why not use the metaphor of violence as a conversation for liberation, which is something the Wachowskis do really well.
Yeah, they do. And yeah, I mean, John Wick is a film with hardly a redeeming second in either of them, really.
The dog dies, it's all downhill.
Yeah, and it's and that one's a little more difficult, you know. Like I could argue with my mom all day long about the merits of a Point Break or a Speed, where it's, you know, he's trying to save people, he's trying to do, he's using his violence as a means to an end, and the end is one of the ultimate good,
right?
Or he's in The Matrix, he's trying to save humanity. John Wick is just pissed because they killed his dog, but the faceless thugs that he's mowing down are also all really bad.
Right.
And so I don't know. There's all kinds of moral quandaries in that. And I think I justify that making me feel better about a violent and ugly world through viewing ugly violence is the idea that, you know, these are athletes performing phenomenal feats. And also that, you know, he springboarded his experience working with these athletes into giving them a showcase, which I also warms my heart quite a bit. You know,
yeah.
You think that there's this story, and I'm probably going to tell it in the wrong way. So don't fact check this. But there's a story that, you know, Keanu Reeves in the Matrix sequels was so overpaid that he filtered his salary into the stunt workers so that they got paid more. Like, he appreciated what they were doing for his career and for the movie itself. And when the production couldn't pay them what they deserved, he gave them what he was getting. And that's really cool. So
it is really
that,
cool.
That is how I justify watching Keanu Reeves kill, I think he kills 126 Russian mobsters in John Wick 2.
Are there even that many mobsters?
I don't think so. I mean, like, I guess he cleaned up the Russian mobster scene in New York pretty well in that case. And also, you know, gave a good commercial for number two pencils as a murder weapon.
Jesus.
But the fact that he used that platform to put a spotlight on a different section of artists in the filmmaking machine that don't necessarily get the respect that they deserve, I think is pretty heartening.
So that takes us then, because we've hit on the little G good, the good that's for you, right? Keanu lets you sort of enter a movie. He's got this comforting presence to you, right? You know that there will always be a Keanu movie on. But we're also now kind of talking about sort of the big G, the fact that Keanu exists and his movies exist. Why does that make this world a better place? And I think you've given me some ideas, but I want to hear if you've got thoughts.
Well, that's, I mean, a big part of it is the showcase of artists that uh-huh. otherwise don't really get a spotlight. But I also think inadvertently, a lot of his films have inspired people to, like, kind of geek out on stuff that they wouldn't normally. I mean, I think a really good prime example of that is the resurgence of Point Break is almost like people are trying to Rocky Horror it in a way. A lot of midnight screenings happen at Point Break. And there's also Point Break Live, which if you've never seen Point Break Live, it is awesome. I'm guessing.
I haven't.
For the listeners, Alex is making a very perplexed face.
Yeah.
So Point Break Live started in Seattle, and it had a residency here, I think like 10 years, which makes it like the Cats of, live theater versions of popular blockbusters. But the way Point Break Live works, and it ended up touring, Point Break Live played at Bonnaroo.
Whoa.
Which is crazy. Can't see? Whoa.
Whoa.
And what it is, a small, theater production of Point Break where Keanu Reeves doesn't show up. And so you've got an audience of like 40 people, and they would sell out constantly. I've seen it 3 or 4 times, actually. So Keanu Reeves doesn't show up, and an actress playing Catherine Bigelow, who directed Point Break and also went on to win the Oscar for The Hurt Locker. She was James Cameron's wife at the time of Point Break and shot it concurrently with T2. It's a better fucking action movie. Anyway. So the Catherine Bigelow actress comes out and says, "Hey, Keanu Reeves didn't show up. We need somebody to play Johnny Utah." And they bring up whoever wants to come up from the audience to audition to play Johnny Utah, who is bar none a top three action movie character name, aside from like John Matrix from Commando. And so everyone gets up and they do a line reading, and most people do a Keanu impression and some people like actually give it their all. And they pick one person to play Keanu Reeves' character for the production of this thing. And then they put that person in a wetsuit. And somebody follows him around with cue cards that they hold way too close to his face so that the line reading's really slow and stilted. And they go through the whole movie. And they play up the homoeroticism that's inherent in Point Break. And the front row of the audience has to wear tarps because blood gets sprayed all over the place during it. And at one point, the first time I saw it, they hooked a guy up to a harness and put him underneath a fan to simulate skydiving. They're like throwing water at him. So it's turned into this like joyous revisitation of this movie that most people have kind of forgotten, right? And it becomes this event that people go out to see and celebrate. And it kind of gives you an opportunity to rethink it, you know?
God, I love that.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And so like I don't think that it's got – a movie like Point Break has the potential to be like a Rocky Horror type thing, despite the fact that they try. It's misremembered as a bad film that's actually a really, really good movie that I personally view as a feminist take on machismo action cinema.
He actually works really well with like feminist and queer filmmakers.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's the Wachowski's muse.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really cool too. Like the choices that he makes as this marquee movie star are really challenging sometimes and strange. I don't think Point Break necessarily intended to be that.
Uh-huh.
But with hindsight and knowing that Kathryn Bigelow is extremely capable of bombastic action sequences while also having a lot of subtext, Point Break reads a lot differently if you are thinking too much about it, which I tend to do.
Yeah.
But so I don't think it works very well as like a drinking movie, although I've played Point Break drinking games too. But I think that that kind of approach to dissecting it and presenting it to people gives it a cross-generational appeal, brings a lot of joy to people, and also gives them a reason to go out and celebrate movies without just sitting on their couch like I do.
Yeah. Fuck. This has been fantastic.
Yeah, Point Break Live is awesome.
Yeah, I really want to see that.
The first time I came to L.A., yeah. My wife took me to it. My then-girlfriend. I knew.
You knew she was the one?
She was going to be the one.
God, that sounds
and I was
like
super pissed
so
off that
fun.
We were going to it.
Yeah.
Because we were at a wedding where we were sitting at a table with like a Hollywood PI, and I was like, this is like the best
shit.
Thing. And
yeah.
She was like plying me with drinks, and she's like, we got to get in a cab and go drive an hour to go to a bowling alley. I'm like
no, I want to talk to this
not.
Guy. Yeah.
And so we're driving there, and I have this this sweet Patrick Swayze t-shirt uh-huh. that I couldn't find, and she had stolen it. And she gave it to me as we were pulling up, and I was like, what are we doing? And we went, and I auditioned for Johnny Utah. I didn't get the part, and I got sprayed with blood. During the course of it. And when we went back to our hotel room,
uh-huh.
the concierge, I was like asking for a wine key. Uh-huh. He was like, why are you covered in blood? And I was like, this is the greatest thing possible. Like, you just took my favorite movie and turned it into one of my favorite experiences.
God, your wife sounds like a champ.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, she sounds awesome. Okay.
Sorry.
We're gonna wrap up soon. But first, I think I want your top three Keanu movies. And I'll do mine too. Do you want me to do – I'll do mine first because – I'm less important than you.
Yes, I was actually going to mention that.
Yeah, it is true. The Matrix got me interested in Kung Fu and probably philosophy too, even though that's a little embarrassing. Bill and Ted 2, I think I like 2 better.
2 is better.
Yeah, it's more fun. And then Constantine, underrated, great movie. All right.
I'm like a populist. Point Break is my favorite movie of all time.
Okay.
I think that it's easily the best bank robbing, surfing, skydiving, football playing, homoerotic bank robbers film of all time.
I don't know if you have the legs to stand on with that.
It might be.
Okay.
I think that Renoir made one as well, but it was black and white, so no one watches that shit. I really like Speed. I think that Speed is, for people that aren't Keanu Reeves nerds, Speed was shot by the DP from Die Hard. So all that like Die Hard, like Speed ushered in the Die Hard Anna. Era of filmmaking where it was like Passenger 57, uh-huh. which is Die Hard on a plane, or Under Siege on a ship, or like all the Van Damme movies. But Speed did it better than anyone else. Like, I am afraid to ride buses in LA now that I live here because of Speed, because even though Dennis Hopper's dead. But it's like a superlative piece of trash filmmaking that utilizes the single location in a beautiful way with an excellent Keanu Reeves performance as this like grieving, stressed out bro. And then I'm going to go with Bogus Journey as well, because
yeah.
Bogus Journey allows him to one of his like 3 or 4 opportunities to play a villain while also being that kind-hearted stoner.
You're right.
Evil Ted Theodore Logan is
it's a
dick.
Double feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
oh, fuck.
And it doesn't get as much attention. I think that people also misremember those movies as being not as brilliant as they are. And I think it's a testament to how great that they are that they don't feel like it. Like, there's major philosophical overtones to both of those movies.
He is such a perfect, like, blank page holder for philosophy.
Yeah.
The Matrix is intensely philosophical. Constantine is, you know, in a sort of a theological
way. It gets into, like, that, like, Dante and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, Bill and Ted is The Day the Earth Stood Still is Constantine. You could probably – or not, sorry, John Wick, you could probably look at that through a philosophical lens, but I don't
know. The lens is violence.
Yeah, right. It's the philosophy
just
of violence.
Sheer violence and neon colors.
All right. So before we get your plugs, I like to do this thing where I ask if there is a piece of content, work, something that has nothing to do with you that you think more people should know about. And you've already said all your Keanu movies, so other than that. For me, I'm listening right now to this great book on tape called The Soul of an Octopus by Cy Montgomery. by, fuck, what is her name? She's a naturalist. Her name is, yeah, Cy Montgomery. She's a naturalist who, the story is about her story of getting to know very intimately and having like a platonic but intensely emotional relationship with octopuses. And it's a very interesting look at conscious, like extra human consciousness. So the consciousness of other animals and how do they think and what is their thinking like. It's a really beautiful story.
I don't know. I guess my knee-jerk reaction here as a new Angeleno who moved here right when Jonathan Gold died was to revisit some of that stuff. And especially given that he passed away right around the time of Bourdain. And those were kind of these two cultural ambassadors who used food as a way to look into people's lives. And so I'm not saying that Jonathan Gold is an unexplored aspect of anyone's lives, but I think that his passing kind of showed a larger national audience, you know, a better way to think about the food that we eat and the people that make it. And I think that we're beginning to explore that a little bit better in a public mindset, that food is stories, and most of the things that you eat have a lot more backstory than we think.
Man, I love that.
Yeah, the most populist obscure thing I could think of. This Topo Chico went to my head.
It's good. We always drink Topo Chico in the booth, guys. Andy, how can people find you, find your work, and find you?
You can find my pedestrian film writing or food writing at Thrillist.com, and you can find me on Twitter at APKRYZA.
Wonderful. Guys, as always, I am Alex Schiffman, and this is At Least There's This. If you guys like this podcast, please share it with a friend. If you didn't like the podcast, then you are obviously a part of the Matrix. If you are about to go on a binge of Keanu movies, I recommend starting with Johnny Mnemonic. It's really good. But as you're trying to track it down, or your significant other who knows sort of the dark, weird internet better than you is trying to find it on some back channel, pull out your phone, go to the iTunes page or Spotify or Android, whatever you guys use. I'm on all of them now because I'm on Anchor Podcasts. Find At Least There's This and give me 5 stars because it goes a really long way in getting people to listen to the podcast. Thank you guys for listening. I hope that this made the crazy, mixed up garbage world we're all living in just a little bit better. Have a good day. Bye.